All right, thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to take a minute to acknowledge some of my co-authors, Marty Schmer with the USDA ARS in Lincoln, Terry Kloppenstein with the University of Nebraska in the Animal Sciences Department, Brian Weinhold with the USDA ARS in Lincoln, and Umberto Blanco with the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. Okay, so Nebraska has been kind of doing a dance with Texas and Missouri for the last few years as to who is the largest beef producer in the country. So we think of Nebraska as kind of the Cornhusker state, but we also have a large number of cattle that need to be fed. And crop residue grazing can provide a very valuable resource and a very cost-effective resource for feeding these cattle. And this is actually a pretty common practice throughout Nebraska, but we're really not utilizing the majority of the crop residue that's out there for feeding the cattle. So this, if we could expand this practice, we could have a really high economic impact on a lot of the cattle producers and on a lot of the corn and soybean producers in the state as well, in terms of being able to rent out that ground to be able to use it for feed. But we do get into issues, especially with a lot of the no-till farmers, and there are a significant amount of no-till farmers in Nebraska, when it comes to how the removal of this residue and how the actual physical impact of the cattle grazing might affect the soil properties in terms of the physical properties with aggregation, things that might affect compaction, things that might affect infiltration, as well as things that might affect the nutrient cycling of the residue that the residue provides for the soil. So with that in mind, we are fortunate to have a study that had been put in place about 23 years ago now. This sampling was done at the end of 2011, where they wanted to look primarily at the yields, how different grazing practices affected yields. So this had been in place for 20 years. There were three primary grazing treatments. There was a no grazing, the check. There was a fall grazing, and then there was a spring grazing. And like I said, all this had been in place for 20 years, and it all had been conducted at the UNL Agricultural Research and Development Center near Meade, Nebraska, which is pretty close to Lincoln, actually. It's on the kind of the eastern edge of the state. It gets about 28 or 29 inches of precipitation annually. All of this was done under just rain-fed conditions. There was no irrigation here. But after 20 years, I was fortunate to get a call to ask me to start looking at some of the impacts on soil properties, because they wanted to expand just past the yields. There was also a lot of cattle impact studies being done as well to see how the different grazing affected the cows and the yields primarily, but they wanted to expand into some of the soil properties, and I was fortunate to get that call to do some sampling and do some of the analysis. So for all of the grazing treatments, everything was done on a corn-soybean rotation. Both phases were in at the same time, so there was basically two paddocks, one in corn-soybean, one in soybean-corn. Both phases were sampled for this study. The soil analysis that was done was a total aggregation, water-stable aggregates, bulk density, electrical conductivity, pH, nitrate nitrogen, ammonium nitrogen, total nitrogen, total carbon, and phosphorus. So here's a representation of the plots. So on the left side here, this was in soybeans at the end of 2011 on this side of the field. And then on to your right was coming out of corn. And then each of these strips went across both soybean and corn. So this is one of the fall grazed treatments. Then spring, non-grazed, spring, fall, spring, non-spring, fall. So there was only one non-grazed treatment in each set of plots. And then the numbers here indicate where the soil samples were collected. So they were randomly sampled in five locations across each strip. And every single strip got this sampling as we went across the field. Okay, so jump right into results. So this is our total aggregation. Oh, I should mention, everything coming out of corn in 2011 is designated as paddock 1. Everything that was coming out of soybeans was designated as paddock 2 for the results. Okay, so this is our total aggregation for paddock 1. This was at our 0 to 5 centimeter depth. And on the bottom here, we do have our aggregate sizes ranging from the smallest to the largest, left to right. So smallest to largest in our diameter in millimeters. We did see some significant differences across the fall grazing treatment, spring grazing treatment, and no grazing treatment in almost all of the aggregate sizes. However, I've stared at this for a long time. Everything was done as a significance of 0.05. I can't really discern any real trend here as to what's going on in terms of the aggregate. Things just kind of tend to bounce around in terms of the total aggregate sizes in paddock one at the 0.05 centimeter depth. We also did 5 to 10 centimeter depth, and the results for paddock one look pretty similar. There are significant differences across the aggregate sizes, but I can't really discern any trend, or it doesn't really look like any one treatment affected the aggregate sizes consistently. This was our paddock two. So again, this is our total aggregates at the 0 to 5 centimeter depth. Again, looking at our aggregate sizes from the smallest to the largest. And here you can see that there are no significant differences across any of the aggregate sizes. So there appeared to be no effects of grazing after 20 years on the total aggregation in our second paddock. Again, the ones coming out of soybeans. So probably a little bit more of a significant way to look at this would be our water-stable aggregates. So we looked at that as well. So here are the water-stable aggregates, again by size. This is looking again across the fall grazing, the spring grazing, and the no grazing. Each of these p-values here are for the different sizes. So this one here is for the 0.5 to 1 millimeter size aggregates, for the 1 to 2 millimeter, and for the greater than 2 millimeter size aggregates. So these letters are significant differences just across that particular size. And for paddock 1, after 20 years, we did see a significant decrease in the wet and the water stable aggregates in the spring grazing treatments as opposed to the no grazing and the fall grazing, which neither of those showed any significant differences. So we saw that in both the smallest aggregate size, the 0.5 to 1 millimeter, and in the intermediate size, the 1 to 2 millimeter. Again, we saw a significant decrease in our spring grazing water-stable aggregates as opposed to our fall grazing and our no grazing. But we did not see any significant differences in the larger water-stable aggregates, anything above 2 millimeters in size, tended to show no significant differences across all of the treatments. So this is the same paddock, now looking at the deeper depth. This is from 5 to 10 centimeters, again, the water-stable aggregates. And as we got deeper in the soil, as you might expect, there was no significant differences at all in any of the water-stable aggregate sizes across any of the grazing treatments for paddock 1. Again, the paddock coming out of corn after prior to sampling. This is the second paddock. This is the one coming out of soybeans prior to sampling. And here we see the same trends as we did in paddock 1, whereas the spring grazing treatment does show to be a little bit lower in the water-stable aggregate sizes, but now we saw no significant differences in this paddock in the 0.5 to 1 millimeter aggregate size or the 1 to 2 millimeter aggregate size. But we did see a difference in the larger aggregates, the greater than 2 millimeter size, again, in the spring grazing. And as we move to a deeper depth in that paddock, the 5 to 10 centimeter depth, again, we saw no significant differences across any of the water-stable aggregates as affected by the grazing treatments after 20 years. So the next thing we looked at was soil bulk density. This, again, is paddock 1. This was done at a depth of 0 to 15 centimeters. And we saw no significant differences in any of the bulk density readings across any of the treatments in paddock 1. In paddock 2, we did see a significant increase in bulk density in both the fall grazing and spring grazing, as opposed to the no grazing. It did increase, but if we look, these are on the same scale. Even though we saw a difference across the treatments, our bulk densities were still relatively low and even lower than they were in the paddock 1. So while we did see some significant differences after 20 years, they don't appear to be in any kind of level that affects any kind of the agronomic practices. And what data that isn't shown are the yields. And throughout the 20-year period of this study, there were never any significant differences seen in yields across any of the grazing treatments. So overall, we haven't really affected the bulk density, haven't affected the yields. There have been some differences in the water-stable aggregates, though, in the spring grazing treatment. Okay, so if we move on to some of the soil chemical properties, again, these are all the soil chemical properties that we looked at. If you look at the very far right column there, that is our significance differences. And this is paddock one, again, coming out of corn, and there were no significant differences in any of the chemical properties measured across any of the grazing treatments in both the 0 to 15 centimeter depths measured and in the 15 to 30 centimeter depths measured. So we didn't see any differences whatsoever in any of the chemical properties measured in paddock one. In paddock two, we did have one of the properties show a significant difference, and that's the total nitrogen. You can see that there was a significant difference across all three grazings, fall grazing, spring grazing, and the no grazing. However, if you look at these numbers, they are very similar. I mean, we did get a significant level there, but really I would not consider that to be any real difference. So again, in both paddocks, we saw essentially no effects of grazing on any of the soil chemical properties after 20 years. Okay, so some of the conclusions. 20 years of grazing did create an increase in bulk density in one of the paddocks, but not in the other. However, the overall bulk densities were still relatively low and had not affected any of the agronomics or any of the yields over 20 years. The trends do suggest that spring grazing can reduce aggregation compared to the fall grazing, but again, there were no effects, no ill effects on the corn yields or soybean yields throughout 20 years or at the end of the study. And overall, at least in this particular field, we just don't see any real ill effects to grazing crop residues if the grazing management practices are conducted correctly. Everything, these were all grazed at the same level for all 20 years. It was about 1.5 animal units per month. So if things are done in a way that's responsible, we're just not seeing any real impacts at all with the different grazing treatments. Nothing that would suggest that grazing is going to be a something that could be detrimental to the growth of either soybeans or corns in eastern Nebraska. So with that, if we have time, I'd be glad to take any questions.
How long is that grazing period?
The grazing?
How long is it still grazing?
Oh, I'd have to look. I believe it's about a 60-day period. I think that's right, but I'd have to look to be sure. I'm a little bit ignorant on the cattle side of things, but I could get that information. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Just a follow-up to that. How much biomass is in
the... We do have the whole other side of the study was looking at just the cattle performance, which did look at how much was actually taken in. That's all been published. I don't know that off the top of my head, but yeah, that was a significant other part of the study where they looked at all that as well. So sorry, I don't have that information.
On your second conclusion there, why do you think there might have been any kind of fall and spring grazing on there?
Well, we think when the cows go on in the fall, the soil is either frozen or is about to be. And so the most of the time they're on in the fall, that the soil is frozen. So we think that they're probably not impacting the soil as much. In the spring, the soils have generally thawed. And we think that there's more of an impact on them just because of the temperature differences in season. We think that's why. And really, for our grazing recommendations in Nebraska, we recommend a fall grazing more than a spring just because of that reason. So. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.